Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Huvane Wealth Management Conversation. My name is Tom Huvane, and I'm a Managing Director and Wealth Advisor here at UBS, and I'll be your host for the next 20 minutes or so. Today's topic is sustainable innovation, and I'm very excited to introduce James Chin Moody, who is the co-founder and CEO of Sendal. James has served on the advisory boards for Westpac Bank and General Electric, and is also recognized as an expert on innovation, sustainability, and the circular economy. In addition to all that, he holds a PhD in innovation theory and is joining us today from lovely Sydney, Australia. So, James, welcome to our conversation today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great. So, James, tell me a little bit about Sendal, the company that you're running and that you've helped co-found, and what inspired an electrical engineer to start the only 100% carbon neutral courier in Australia and in the United States?
Yeah, good question. I mean, as you said, you probably heard, I'm a bit of a nerd. And as an engineer, I think one of the things that drives me is I like to build stuff, and in particular build stuff that actually has a positive impact on the planet. And one of the things, it was around about 2013, a friend of mine and I, we both had young children. I just finished some time at the National Research Agency in Australia, and we were looking for really, you know, ways in which we could actually help to make a difference in people's lives and also a difference on the planet. And we actually start off, it's funny, we now run a logistics company, but we didn't start off in logistics. We actually started off building a giving marketplace. You might imagine we both had young kids. A bag of baby clothes is, you know, once you've grown out of it, isn't really valuable to you, but it's valuable to someone else. We decided to see, it was almost an experiment, to see how much friction we could remove from the act of giving. So, because our thesis was that if you make giving really, really easy, more and more people could do it. And so we kept on down that path. We created this sort of community. We had 50,000 people before we knew it. But the biggest pain point of giving turned out to be delivery, getting the item from one person to another. And as an engineer, and engineers, you might say, we started to really drive into that problem. And it turned out it was actually a very difficult problem to solve because, you know, someone, a small scale, large scale logistics, everyone got their head around where, you know, you're sort of sending from warehouse to a home even. But small scale distributed logistics is something that very few people are focusing on. And so what and particularly if you want to have, you know, things like national coverage, which is what we are looking for, and even international coverage now. And so we ended up really driving into that problem and found that, you know, there was really nothing there for folk who wanted to send small package quantities, such as ourselves, where it was just one at a time. Fast forward to about 2014, and we basically started to build out a national network for ourselves. But this really amazing thing happened around Christmas that year, which was a whole lot of eBay sellers started to hop onto this giving network. And believe it or not, they started to use the giving network as a parcel delivery platform. It would be like, you know, Tom, I'll sell you something on eBay. And now both of us hop over here and I'll pretend to give it to you just to take advantage of the delivery solution that we've built. And that really opened our eyes back in 2014 to the fact that there was this massive need. And, you know, e-commerce still was just getting established at that time, the Shopify's and eBay's. But we realized that nobody was building for those small businesses out there, those, you know, the Etsy right. sellers, the eBay sellers, the Shopify sellers, that, you know, no one was really creating that 100% frictionless solution. And interestingly, you know, we started from day one, as you mentioned, that we wanted to take full responsibility. So our solution was basically, you know, we found the only way we could do it was to tap into idle capacity into networks. But that meant that we were quite cheaper than the incumbents, but even better, we were much more efficient and we ended up offsetting the rest. So we were, from day one, we were carbon neutral as well. Wow. So fast forward 5 years, you know, what did we end up building? Well, we, you know, be fascinating. We ended up building, you know, the only national courier that's 100% dedicated to small business in both Australia and the US. We're the only 100% carbon neutral courier. And more fun, we're basically, you know, we're a courier that's got an NPS of 70. And if you know anything about NPSs, you know, we've got NPS better than Netflix, in an industry where traditionally folk, you know, can't get the service that they deserve and the prices that they deserve from the incumbent. So that's been, you know, it's been an amazing journey.
Right, and I have to imagine with a country the size of Australia, you know, the logistics can be a huge challenge. And so when you think about, you know, how were you able to cut carbon emissions, and at the same time, you know, undercut the big companies, you know, because they really are your competition, it would seem, or maybe they're not. So how do you do that?
Yeah, it's, you know, and like every solution, there's multiple layers to it. But, you know, to begin with, and this is one of the things we realized, there's a lot of trucks on the road. You know, part of what we do is we do work with the sort of the enterprise and the mid-tier level couriers, and make them available to small businesses and effectively, you know, fill their backhaul. You know, a truck will deliver stuff to a neighborhood, and it often goes back half empty, or if not completely empty. So we're filling that capacity that exists already. And so that was the first thing that we did. And of course, that increases the utilization rate of the entire network. But we took a step further. You know, we then said, well, everything that remains, we're going to offset, which was just the right thing to do. But now, these days, we're even taking a step further than that, which is we're actually starting to help our providers, our suppliers who, you know, own trucks or, you know, warehouses. We're actually helping them convert. So in Australia, we haven't been up there yet in America, but in Australia, you know, some of our first mile delivery, you know, pickup providers, for example, and delivery providers have actually started to convert their fleet to 100% solar. And in fact, right. You know, putting solar panels on the roof of the depot, because a general courier has two great assets. One is their vehicles and the other is their depot and the sun on the top of that depot. And so, you know, converting that sun and using it to charge the trucks while the delivery vans are being loaded or unloaded just makes a huge amount of sense. So really wow. Looking at all those, you know, going from carbon offsetting or utilization to offsetting to reducing carbon intensity is basically the journey we're on.
Wow, so it seems like a real, you know, win-win situation for not only the environment, but also for the business owners, as well as the logistic companies and filling in their excess capacity. So that's really fantastic. You know, we've you know, the United States has tended to be a little bit behind in the idea of sustainability and social investing, but we're catching up very quickly, like we do with a lot of things. And we're starting to see a very big trend. You know, companies like Tesla have been very instrumental in helping drive that. You know, many of our clients tend to be very focused on making sure that their investments are not only doing good for them and their families, but also doing good for society. And that becomes a win-win. And along the lines of what you mentioned with solar panels, you know, companies like Tesla are now selling cars or trucks to the FedExes of the world and the electric cars. You know, so one thing I think about is, and maybe you can help me with this, is, you know, why is it important, and why is having an environmental friendly company so important?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, multiple reasons. We were Australia's first technology B Corp. I'm not sure if you're aware of what a B Corp is, Tom.
Yeah, explain what that is. I've heard of it, but for some people, they may not. It's a little bit different term than here in the United States.
Yeah, it's really built around the concept that you're there for, you know, stakeholders, all stakeholders, and that in the long term, that actually drives even better performance than if you're taking, you know, very short term, narrow focus around decision making for just one particular set of stakeholders. And so, you know, we're the only global logistics B Corp. We were the first Australian technology B Corp. But really, from us, that means having a company where it's not just about, you know, the problem you solve, but the purpose you're trying to fulfill. Our purpose is shipping that's good for the world. You know, we actually think that we exist. Because if you'd answer, why do you exist? You know, you can actually, one, it gives you a huge amount of focus. You know, we exist to level the playing field for small business over big, to reduce inequality. We also exist to help the world see a transition to a zero carbon delivery platform. Because actually, you know, transport and logistics is 10% of all global carbon emissions. So we have a very strong purpose behind why we should exist as a company. But that then helps us to drive both our strategy. It's interesting. It really, you know, but it also de-risks the business as we see it. So, for example, the fact that we're 100% carbon neutral means that we're de-risked. If there ever is a price on carbon in Australia or the US or, you know, other countries in which we operate, we have actually removed that contingent liability because we don't, you know, have a zero carbon platform. You know, the other thing we do is we unlock, you know, a huge amount of, thought, both within our team, you know, different ways in which we can actually accomplish a similar goal. One, you were mentioning before, one of the things I believe is waste equals opportunity. You know, and you think about a depot, the roof and all that heat, all that sunlight, you know, is actually a form of waste. There's an opportunity. You can actually change the way you think about things with a purpose-driven company.
Wow. It seems like there's an interest there in this, and you're seeing probably a big breakout in Australia, and here in the United States, are you starting to see that similar trend that we're starting to move in the direction of thinking a little bit differently about how we use our resources?
Absolutely, and I think the other thing that's really been we've had the COVID crisis, and we're still in the midst of the COVID crisis right now, but there's still the climate crisis as well, and the bushfires in both, you know, Australia and the West Coast last year of the US.
Right.
You know, basically a sort of, you know, sentiment is shifting quite significantly, and here's the other thing, Tom, that's really amazing. Our small businesses, all of our customers, what's really interesting, by being 100% carbon neutral for their delivery, it's actually something they can talk to their customers about now as well. You know, they can switch to Sendal, they're going to save money and become 100% carbon neutral. Now they can actually, and for certain categories in particular, it's a really powerful message of their commitment, you know, and alignment with their values. Because one of the, you know, in the world of e-commerce, there was some recent research that showed that 60% of consumers are more likely to buy from a company that shares their values. Yeah,
right.
That's a huge shift that's going on right now.
Right, that's a great point. And I think you're seeing that a lot more now in the United States. And I like your point. You know, we're always thinking about risks and rewards. And I really like your point about, you know, the risks that could be involved that you guys will not see if some regulations were to come in to put carbon emission standards. You know, that's not a risk that you guys will be able to. You've already eliminated that risk in your plan. So I think that's really, really exciting. And you know, one of the questions I had on that was, you know, talking of small businesses. You know, obviously we're working our way through the pandemic. You are in a very unique situation with your business to have kind of a bird's eye view of what's going on with small businesses. When you see what's happening in Australia, when you see what's happening in the United States, you know, from your bird's eye view, you know, how are you seeing how this pandemic is playing out? And, you know, do you see recovery? Do you see, you know, us getting back to where we were at a certain point? You know, what are you seeing from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Because we're such a long-tail business, you know, and we have so many customers, you can see a lot from you know, based on what's going on. And so here's what we saw, Tom. You know, in March, as the lockdown started to occur in both America and Australia, it was interesting. The companies that were the small businesses who were already online, basically we saw them surge. You know, a typical business was selling more than 50% more than they were before, to begin with. And that was just at the beginning. But then the second thing started to happen as the year progressed, which was more and more small businesses also coming online. So at first it was the ones who were already online seeing a surge. And then the second thing was seeing these you know, I think we saw 2.5 times the number of new customers to Sendal, and sometimes people will ask, selling for the first time online.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And so I think we've seen, you know, and so it's both, if you think about, you know, and the world is going to the biggest shift to e-commerce that it's ever seen. But really that's driven both by, I think, you know, huge surge in demand for, you know, folks shopping online, and that doesn't seem to be tailing off anytime soon right now. But also what's really fascinating and in some ways, you know, very heartening, that we are seeing a huge number of, you know, huge amount of supply and a lot of innovation, a lot of new businesses, you know, jumping online and in many cases for the first time. And that's something that I think, you know, again, we look at that and back to our purpose. Our purpose is really there to help them thrive and to help them compete in really the fiercest battlefield there is, which is the logistics battlefield. It's often the hardest part of the entire e-commerce experience.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds really exciting that you're seeing so many new businesses become created, because we're in an environment where so many businesses are, you know, maybe going in the other direction. And so it's really kind of the natural law here of activity. And, you know, I think it's really great what you're doing is really eliminating a barrier to entry for a lot of these businesses and making it much easier for them to, you know, to get, to start a business, and then to do it in not only an innovative way, but now a very sustainable way. So I think you really have a really great model there that really is very interesting and, you know, should bear fruit, in a huge way, you know, in the future. And speaking of kind of putting innovation, you know, together with entrepreneurs, I know that, you know, I want to kind of end this chat on a, you know, kind of a little bit of a lighter note. You know, I know one of the things about you is that you're a little bit of a TV star, right? You were, for 7 years, I think it was just how long you were doing, you were a regular panelist and judge on the ABC TV program, The New Inventors. So tell us about that experience. Tell us about, you know, what you learned there. Tell us about, you know, what kind of enthusiasm you felt when you went through that. And, you know, maybe if you have a quick story on you know, maybe one person that really kind of stood out to you, that gave you some really good insights into, and then some hope for where things are going. How was that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those of you who don't know the show, it was basically a very polite version of the Shark Tank. We were the ABC. And, you know, really there was no investment. It was really, you won a plastic trophy at the end. But you did get a, right. At one point, I think 10% or 15% of Australia would watch that show every Wednesday night. So it was a very, you know, it was an amazing, sort of experience to really be, you know, there with, we did, over 300 episodes, and, you know, it's 900 inventions there with so many entrepreneurs, so many inventors. And I think the, you know, the big lesson that I learned from that whole experience, and I think there's, you know, both in a good and a cautionary way, is that, you know, there's the idea and then there's the execution of the idea. And
right.
It's really interesting, the and you have to have both. You know, the idea is not enough.
Right.
And, but also, you know, you can be a great executor and you might be on the wrong idea. So you've really got to have both of those. And so it was funny, things that you could have bowled me over with a feather, that it would succeed, did amazingly well. Like one example was these straws that, you know, had flavoring in them already, and you could suck up milk, and it was great, but it was very, very clunky and cumbersome. They solved it. They got it.
Yep.
And it's been amazing, and they're all over the place in Australia. Versus there was another inventor who had literally been working for, I don't know, his entire life on creating believe it or not, a chainsaw that could cut through wood and could cut through bricks, but couldn't cut through a bone, or couldn't cut through somebody's arm. And like gave that incredible information.
Wow.
I'm going, why is every chainsaw not like that right now? You know,
right?
And he's so fascinated. You know, it's one of those things. And they're still working at it. So I think one of the big things that I learned from that is, you know, one, you know, focus on the quality of the idea. That's really important. But then also focus on the execution, and that's really the, you know, back to, as you mentioned, my, you know, innovation. Innovation is really the, you know, the processes involved in taking an idea and making it reality. And it's that, you know, it's both of those. It's the process, and it's the pathway to having a positive impact on the world that makes all the difference.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you that, you know, having a conversation with you today, and that some of our, you know, our clients and our listeners can maybe learn a few things from, I think was a very good idea. And I think, you know, you executed it very well. So I don't know if I have a deal for you, but, you know, certainly, you know, it was really a time well worth spent in having this conversation, learning a little bit more about your business, a little bit about the innovation. You know, I hope that maybe when you've got either new inventions or new things that are happening at Sendal, I hope you'll come back and you'll have further conversations with us. So, you know, I want to thank you, James, for your tremendous insights today. And all the best for continued success with Sendal. For those of you with any questions, or if you'd like to continue this conversation to learn more about innovation and sustainability, you can reach our team at from our team website at ubs.com/team/Huvain. So finally, thank you all again for your time today, and we look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you, Thomas. It's been an absolute pleasure.